And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast.
45.
That's right. It's number 45. He's Ed Sorbo. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. Ed will tweak your knobs if you know what I'm talking about here. I'm Michael Gugis. You can find me parking my bike at the Apex at a track day or a racetrack near you. This is number 45, right, Ed?
That's what we said.
I'm eating dinner,
so that's why I wasn't
is
able
it
to
Hickory
respond
Far- is
to
it
your funny little line about tweaking knobs.
Is it Hickory Farms?
No, it's like a regular meal with chocolate milk.
That
I had Hickory Farms with me at my last race weekend.
That's so freaking awesome.
And anyway, you remember Tiki, the neighborhood dog, right?
Yeah. How's Tiki?
He totally knows I have Hickory Farms in the house. I have no idea how he could possibly know that. I don't know who might have given him any sausage or cheese.
Because most
of... say that he loves me.
Most of a dog's brain revolves around finding the person in the neighborhood with the Hickory Farms.
I have a mechanical table to lift my motorcycles up and down on, right? A hydraulic table.
Right.
And so the wooden table is outside the shop now, the one that I used to use a ramp to get up to, because I'm like, you know, maybe sometimes I'll need two tables.
Right.
Well, that table is the perfect height to brush a dog.
Whenever
I was brushing Tiki, you know, I'd have him get up on the table. Now, when I say brush, he just runs over and jumps on the table.
Awesome. Now, did you reinforce that behavior with Hickory Farms?
No, I didn't have to.
Really?
And check this out. He has now learned to walk to the table and jump up, because twice he jumped on the table at full speed and just whoop off the other side, right?
I still have to use Hickory Farms to get my dad to do things.
Humans, not as smart as dogs, my friends.
Smart as dogs. So, what are we going to talk? We're going to talk about some of the MotoGP race this weekend. But first, before we do that, I want to talk to you about my new motorcycle road racing hero. You know who it is,
but
Ed?
Before you do that, I want to say something I just thought of.
Okay, but before you say that, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
You can't teach an old dad new tricks. Why? What is it about World Superbike?
Oh, my God. I'm excited about World Superbike. I read something. I don't like to push other people's... I don't really like to promote other websites, but there's a nice blog called gp1.com, and they have, it's in Italian, but there's an English version, and it does a decent job of translating. Anyway, I think it's a really good and interesting site. So, spectatorship at World Superbike is down, and part of the thought, and I think you'll appreciate this, part of the thought is that it's because World Superbike is so freaking similar to MotoGP at this point in history. They're both four-cylinder, 1,000cc bikes. They look identical. They're almost the same speed, you know. The leading World Superbike guys are qualifying, you know, at times. I will put the mid-pack in MotoGP. And so there's no differentiation between the two. Okay? So
right, and the one is considered by everybody to be the premier, the faster bikes, the faster guys. And so... people like myself who can scrape together time to watch one series.
Right.
I want to watch every single bit of the thing and get fully immersed.
Right.
And I don't have the time to do that, especially if the races are on the same weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the reason I don't watch IndyCar anymore, because I can watch every moment of a Formula One weekend. Right?
Right. Okay.
Okay, so the question posed by the blogger over there was, how do you make World Superbike different enough that it's interesting? And they kicked around two ideas, one of which was completely dumb, which was bring back naked superbikes. And the fact, as they say, bring them back, the fact is that there were never naked superbikes in the World Superbike Series, okay?
Well, what they mean by bring them back is back to the 80s, when you had them at the national level.
Right, okay? And they it's kind of a chuckle to see them at this, because there's a... there's a naked Kawasaki 800 that runs as a spec series somewhere in Europe. Like I said, it's kind of a chuckle to watch, okay? But
but the argument here is that you can see the rider better somehow, but that's bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
right,
you know, the bikes will be slower. I'm sure there'll be exciting racing and all, but that's not what's... World Superbike racing is plenty exciting.
Yeah, that's right?
That's not why it's not getting attendance.
That's not your problem. The problem is that it's just way too similar to MotoGP. So here's the idea that I saw kicked around and that I like a lot. Okay.
Right.
You make the races longer, and you mandate a pit stop.
So you make them into the kind of like an endurance race.
A little bit more like an hour long, race, something right. like that. Just one rider, you know, and they can be 45 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever. The length has to be different.
Well, a MotoGP race is 45 minutes. So
no,
you need it to be longer than that. I'm with you. And the series that shows that this format works is NASCAR.
Yeah.
And right. You know, and all those people that they go to NASCAR, just shut up. Right?
Right.
That place is making money.
We're not. Exactly, right?
So the format about NASCAR, right, is that it's a whole event. It's an all-day thing.
Exactly.
You're up in the grandstands. And if you walk away to go to the bathroom or get another beer and miss three laps, it's not the end of the world.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. And then the pit stops are exciting.
They are. Yep. I don't know why people object to them so much. It's fun to watch. You can do if you have pit stops. You mandate the use of two different tires. Now you've got strategy. Now you've got the team involved. Now it's a much more multi-level event, you know, and that would be different enough. It might not be different enough. It might make the TV package a little more difficult to sell, although I don't think so. But I'll tell you something. That would definitely help put butts in the seats, so to speak, for the actual event. I think I just love the idea. I really do.
Okay, so you love solo series races on Saturday at sprint events.
I do.
Okay, but there was one of those this weekend and you didn't go.
No.
And those events are always undersold.
Oh, yeah.
For the clubs that do it.
Yeah, I'm not...
fact that you love the idea of converting World Superbike to a more of an endurance format with some type of minimum required number of pit stops, we know there aren't enough Michael Gugis's in the world to make this idea work.
We could have just stopped with there aren't enough.
We've got to come up with something more.
We could have just stopped with there aren't enough Michael Gugis's in the world, Ed.
That goes without saying. I mean, everybody can tell that I do everything I can to spend more time associating with you.
This is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Why don't more...
Pretty soon you're going to have to make appointments for all the people that are going to be calling you.
Yes,
I agree it's a great format, but there are even less people around the world interested in watching endurance racing than there are who want to watch sprint races,
but
the people you're talking about, they're hardcore, they're great fans, they really will go buy Tide because
Tide
sponsored their team,
right?
But there are millions of people who want to watch MotoGP.
Yes.
And only 10,000 people who want to watch what you're talking about.
But like I said, the idea is to get people in the stands for the promoters at World Superbike because that's what's killing them right now.
Here's my idea.
I'm listening to your idea.
The Dorna and who runs World Superbike?
Dorna.
Okay, then Dorna needs to get their shit together.
Right.
And schedule all of the events on non-conflicting weekends.
Well, that would be a good idea.
We got 16 World Superbike races and 16 MotoGP races-ish.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Right, and they got how many of them on the same weekend? I'd be willing to bet that it's possible, it might not happen in the first year,
right,
to get it to where we could have 32 weekends in a row of racing, none of them conflicting with each other.
I think it's a great idea, too.
Right?
And then
you run as many different tracks as you can, of course, but
yep.
Clearly you send both series to Argonne and all the other tracks where there's gazillion people there, right?
Right.
And then you get the same format of coverage that they're doing. I haven't watched the World Superbike, so maybe they do have the same format of coverage for World Superbike as I see in MotoGP. But if you do that quality of coverage for both, right?
Right.
And you make it to where I can go to one place and buy a package deal to get all of it in one time.
Oh, how cool would that
be? It's really easy, right?
Yeah.
I think that'll make a huge difference. And you can then use World Superbike. You send it to the tracks that maybe you're not sure about yet, or
right.
They don't have enough market, and you know,
right?
And you use the two
Laguna Seca
each. You could even do stuff They could do a cool technology thing where they could show a lap of one bike or the other real on the screen, following, and then have the imaginary graphic of the other type of bike riding, you know, and so guess what? You'd find that the bikes were damn close in the middle of the corner.
Right.
And then, you know, they one's faster on the straightaway and this and that. You could, I say, combine the two series as yet more. Because you can't separate them enough. When it comes down to it, it's fast motherfuckers on fast motorcycles.
That's interesting. So you're saying that we can't differentiate between them.
You can't differentiate, yeah, because if you go the endurance way that you're suggesting, are people who love it, but there aren't enough.
Not really endurance. A MotoGP race is right about 35 minutes at this point. It's not 45. It's close, okay, closer to 35.
Okay, so if you went to an hour, it would be significantly longer. But we got so many whiners, right? The guys would be like, if a superbike doesn't have trick forks on it, it's not a superbike, you know?
Right.
And so then they'll they didn't need to change the tires. You just made them change the tires.
Did you get the
Moto S? The Moto ST series was brilliant conceptually.
Right.
And all 400 really smart people who race motorcycles in America loved it. But 400 isn't enough.
Did you get the name? Yeah. Did you get the names of those people who were whining about the fork thing? We got to go visit them, Ed.
it's a person on Facebook, and people write on social media. They don't even read what they write before they push send.
So you don't
even know where the mistake is. Were they just as dumb as Donald Trump and just running their mouth, or right? Or did they just, you know, type wrong and didn't know what corrections were made and whatever? I mean, my opinion is if you can't be bothered to read what you were posting, then it has no value, even less value than the no value it had in the first place, right? If you have something important to say, start a podcast.
Ed, let's talk about MotoGP this weekend.
Dana Pedrosa.
No. I have a new hero. I have a different hero.
Pedrosa.
I have a different hero, Ed, and we got to talk. We got to talk about him. Okay.
My hero is shorter than your hero.
I'm not really sure. I don't know how tall the guy is. Are you ready?
I'm ready
for this, Ed? Tony Elias. Okay.
I didn't watch Moto 2 yet. I'm sorry.
No. He's in MotoGP. He finished 21st. Okay, here is why Tony is my hero, okay? Tony was the 2010 Moto2 champion, okay?
Right.
Since then, 2011, wins zero, podiums zero, poles zero. 2012, wins, podiums, poles zero. 2013, wins, podium, poles zero. 2014, didn't even ride. 2015, wins, podium, pole, zero. And he got a ride in MotoGP. He is absolutely my hero. Dude, his record since 2010 is identical to mine in world-class GP competition. Okay? And somebody is paying this dude to ride.
Dude, don't say that on a popular podcast. He might hear it and shoot himself.
He is my
hero. His record is the same as yours.
He is absolutely my hero.
Everybody knows that Tony took the ride with Forward after the guy starts with a B.
Yeah. What's his name?
Brattle.
Yeah,
Brattle
Stefan Brattle.
The Aprilia team.
Right.
And so there's only so many people available who have MotoGP experience
right?
who don't already have rides.
All you have to do is beat Valentino Rossi once. And apparently that's the full-time employment act for as long as you want to ride for the rest of your life. You know? I mean, dude, it was 9 years ago.
Remember that Forward has a contract. They have to fill those grid spots with the Dharma, right? So, you know, I'm sure it's a deal where they're like, hey, you want to come ride, you get whatever prize money you earn, right?
Or something like that.
Yeah, it's not going to be a big paying job. Hey, the guy didn't get lapped, right?
Nope.
And I tell you what, another indicator of how good this race was is there was a ton of battling in the top 10 for them to show us to where we never even got to see the guy. I didn't see the factory spec bike until it pulled into the podium.
Oh, you
area.
Lorenzo?
No, the factory, not the factory. What do you think?
The open spec bike?
Open.
Yeah.
Bike was pulling into Park Firma.
Right. They
never showed the bike during the race because the battle for second was so good, and then the battle for sixth-ish between the four guys was so good. They kept showing all of that.
Okay, I gotta. I have to make an alteration to a prediction I made earlier this year, Ed.
It's called cheating, dude.
Nope. It's just a reflection of reality, and it's honest, you know?
Okay, what?
I think that Marquez might not have the title wrapped up before they go to Valencia.
Yeah.
I think he might have to battle for it there. Okay.
Did you watch the press conference after the race?
I watched the one during the race where he just said, "My fault, I got excited."
Right. No, yeah. I was going to change the subject. So, Lorenzo comes into the park firm after a long cool down lap,
right,
and he puts his hand on top of his head, and I thought he was making a symbol for a mohawk, and I had no idea why he would want to do that.
Right, it's the shark.
But it turns out he was making a shark fin because he's the shark, remember?
Right.
At the last round, Rossi had a little goldfish in front of a big shark, and Lorenzo's like, "I don't mind being a shark."
Yep.
So they were talking about that, and they shook hands in the press conference, and Rossi offered the shark to Lorenzo. So I predict that Lorenzo, they're going to do some deal, and there's going to be a shark on Lorenzo in his helmet or who knows what. It's brilliant marketing, and it came from the question that one of the reporter guys asked.
Which was?
Something about, you know, do you like being a shark? Or are you going to put a shark on your helmet or whatever? And then Lorenzo said something like, "Well, you know, I don't know." And Rossi said, "Oh, it's okay." And then they shook hands. So, you know, it went kind of quick, but you'll keep an eye out for that. So how about my boy Dana Petrosa?
Dude, how awesome was that? Whoops. Are you still there? Hang on, Ed. Are you still there? Oh, man. Ed, I just hung up on him, so I'm going to have to call him back. This will be fun to do in the middle of the podcast because that gives me an opportunity to say some things while the phone is ringing. What was I going to say? Without Ed here, what can I say? What can we say about
Ed? Engineering, Ed speaking.
God damn it. He's,
don't push he's, the damn buttons while we're talking.
He's back already. I was planning on saying something really insightful while you weren't going to interrupt. And then you...
You can't say anything insightful without me to spark the thought.
Don't make me come over there.
Where awesome. Are we on time?
Oh, we're 17 minutes or so?
We're still okay.
We're still okay. Yeah, so Pedrosa...
So how about Dana, and how about the quality of that race?
That was awesome.
Push each other any harder without ramming each other,
right?
You know? It was awesome. I love it. Rossi said, "I played all my cards and one I didn't know about, which was the pass in the chicane to lead onto the back straightaway."
Right.
He knew it was a full-on, this can't work. But I was impressed that you could even do it.
I'm not even sure he intended to do that. But he's just trying to outbreak Danny. You know.
Well, he knew that, right? If he followed Danny out of that corner, it was the same thing that happened.
Right.
All the other lap, right? So
right.
His only hope was to get in front and disrupt his drive enough. But every single time he did that, you could see Danny taking a breath and adjusting his line.
Uh-huh.
And why was it he could adjust his line when he needed to? Because of the hard work that him and his team did in practice and qualifying,
it was
being set up like that.
Dude,
that was genius.
He was that, and he was riding. Dude, he was at 110% the whole
race.
He
was fully back. I've never seen him ride that
aggressively.
He even said that you know, everybody knows that Rossi is the guy in this battle, right? And that this is his weak thing. His way to win was to be a Lorenzo.
Right.
He was never good in the fight.
And
not only was he good in the fight, he was good in the fight after Rossi sat there and made him think about it for 3 million years.
Jack,
right? Brilliant.
Jack with his head the whole race. And when it came, and when it came down to it, he was ready to throw.
It was brilliant.
You know, you look back, every one of us who's raced looks back at the last year, the last weekend, the last decade, whatever it is, okay? And we look back and we look for those moments that make it worthwhile, that just make you go, that was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
When he stepped on the podium post-race and the place went nuts, that was so cool. That was just, you know.
Oh, yeah, you could. Yeah, totally, right? Because all that time, the surgery and the pain and all that shit, you're like, fuck, why am I doing this?
Right.
And then, right? No, now you know why.
That's why.
Right? You don't win those trophies. You earn those trophies.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, we're coming short on time, so you wanted to talk about Marquez.
2-minute board.
Yep.
So Marquez crashed, lost the front end in that downhill left-hander.
Right.
He ran up to the bike, and he's shaking his fists and yelling at the bike. And the announcers did a good job of saying he's all mad at himself. Bullshit. He was screaming at the bike, "Why did you do that again?" It's the same crash over and over again. Something about the balance of that bike and the characteristic of the engine. You just, the line is too fine between wicked fast and holding it up, and fuck, it's gone. Right?
Exactly.
And you could see that in his posture, in his body language. Anybody who's raced knows that's true.
Mm-hmm.
A few minutes later, they're interviewing him, and he's saying, "Yep, it's my fault. I went in there too fast, you know, with a full load of fuel and maybe a little bit of a tailwind, and I just asked too much, yada, yada, yada." Even with the big smile on his face, he was lying through his teeth, and you couldn't tell. That's his job. And it's also true, right? He knows the limitation. He knows the weakness and the strength of that bike.
Right.
And he pushed it just a little bit too far,
and that's
just a little bit too soon. And he's right. If he had had just a little bit less gas or just a little bit less tailwind, he probably would not.
It would have worked. It would, and he'd be a genius. But that's the thing that I love so much about watching that guy. Second place is just not acceptable. You know?
Well, and yeah, you've got to respect that dude, right? We're ready for a fight. I've got a machine gun. Marquez has a knife. Okay, watch out for Marquez.
Exactly right.
You know? What I wanted to tie this into is a story that's on NPR today.
Okay.
On their website. The Boston Marathon ran today. Wait a minute. Berlin Marathon, sorry. And a Kenyan guy had a real shot at the world record. He missed it by 63 seconds.
Ugh.
Okay? And he is sponsored by Nike, and he has prototype shoes that they've been working on for a while. And the shoes include the padded part that you actually put your foot on, and even the liner, the socks. Okay? It's all a packaged thing. And they've been developing these shoes for quite some time. So starting in the first kilometer, the insoles started to come up out of the shoes. And so the picture here of him crossing the finish line and breaking the tape has the insoles sticking out in the back, flapping, about ready to fall out of the shoes completely.
Okay.
Now, understand that these guys run at a pace where if you stop to tie your shoelace...
Oh, you're doomed. You're
just destroyed, right?
Right.
Okay? And so... does he complain about the shoes? And you gotta imagine that with 63 seconds, right? If your shoes are falling apart on you, that makes a that matters, right?
Right.
He says, "It wasn't a good day for me in these shoes, although they're actually very good. I tested them in Kenya, but I had bad luck on the day." And then he went on to talk about the rest of the stuff. Right? His sponsor, he works with them, they pay him, they're developing stuff. He remembers his job, even at the emotional moment of crossing the line and just missing out on the record. He talked about the positive, he won the race, he set a personal best. Just like Marquez, this is what professional athletes do. And this is what we need to do as we work our way up so that potential sponsors and yada, 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 we look good and everybody knows that we know how to do that job. So kudos for both of those guys. You really see the true person when things don't go their way. It's easy to be happy and magnanimous when you win.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm looking for the, I'm laughing. There was I think it was a Nike commercial years and years and years ago where they shot it in Africa and they found some tribesmen. And they gave him the shoes, and it's all this fast-cut MTV thing. And it comes to the end, big close-up on the shoe. Then the guy looks down, and he says something in his native language, okay?
Right.
Nike doesn't check to see what he has said.
Uh-oh.
Right? They figured nobody knows this guy's language. He lives in the middle of Africa from nowhere, right? He's never seen a TV camera, right? So they start airing the ad, and there's some professor in the middle of nowhere who sees the ad, and of course, he specializes in this language. And what the tribesman had said was...
These shoes are too tight. I need looser shoes.
Well, that's not as bad as I thought you were going to say that he was going to say. I mean, no, that's just a size problem, right? That, that's easy to fix.
But that was.
But yeah, that's a good example, right?
Spectacular.
The bigger the potential problem, the more you better check everything.
Oh my God!
When I did the thing where I rode the Paris Hilton painted up bike onto the stage at the Tonight Show,
right,
to deliver her for the interview with Jay Leno.
Right.
He had a GSXR 600 who was painted up in the colors of the team that she was sponsoring in MotoGP 125 class at the time. And they had this woman, handler person, who, when she came over to me and she's looking at the bike, I don't remember the name of the club that was the sponsor, but if I go to my Facebook page, you can see a picture of me on the stage,
right,
with the bike. Anyway, the word was, you know, big letters on there, and her job is to make sure the stuff you're just talking about doesn't happen. So she goes, what does this word mean? Let's see, P-A-C-H-A is the name of the club. And it has a picture of two cherries and some stars and such. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I think it's a club somewhere in Europe. And so she went away and checked to make sure that it didn't say fuck you or something, right? When we roll onto the stage on national TV live. So.
Oh, man. I just, you know what, the fact, Ed, that you rode a motorcycle onto the stage with Paris Hilton on the back in front of Jay Leno, you are the reason I don't write fiction, Ed. I could never make you up.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, that was one of those crazy deals where the universe just works out. So Paris's club is sponsoring a guy that Road Racing World knows, racing in Europe. And they find out she's going to be on the Jay Leno show. And they go, wouldn't it be great if she could ride a bike onto the stage, painted up like the race bike, right? So they call John, hey, do you know anybody who can make this happen? So John has some Suzuki sitting around, right? So John calls me and says, you know, can you get it? And it needs to be done like in 3 days total.
Right. I remember this.
So they get body work, hot bodies, sends body work right away to the painter. The painter paints the stuff overnight. I pick it up still damp, mount it up on the bike, M4 sends a slip on. I get the thing all put together. I drive, I show up early in the morning at the studios, and the plan is for Paris to ride the bike on stage. And I'm thinking, I've never seen a picture of her riding a motorcycle. So I left the passenger pegs on the bike and brought every bit of riding gear I had so I could have all the possible colors. Thinking, if she can't ride, then at least I can, you know, I'll put a tin advisor on. They won't know who the rider is. And, right, I'll drop her off on stage. Right. So we get there, and her handlers come over and say, you know, can we practice and whatever. I'm like, yeah, good idea. Let's do that. Right. So she gets on the bike, and it's clear she hasn't ridden before. So I give her a few pointers, and it's, you know, and I'm like, and I say, would it be better if you passenger, did I ride? And she says, yes. So I'm like, okay, cool. So she gets her super crazy high heels on, practices getting on and off the bike, and I'm here to tell you, I have no idea how women walk in those things.
That's the thing I was going to point out.
Talk about an athlete. And here's another thing I want to say. I saw her show where she plays the dumb blonde and travels around the country.
No.
I forget what it was called, right?
Right.
That is not who she is.
Of course not.
Hardworking, has her shit together. Okay.
Nope.
So we ride around in the parking lot a little bit, practice getting on up the bike, and then we ride onto the stage, practice where I'm going to stop. She gets off the bike. Okay, we're all good. So then I go get all my gear, lay it all out for the guy in charge, and I say, this is all the stuff I got. What color combinations do you want me to wear? He goes away, checks or something, and he comes back and he says, just what you're wearing now. And I was wearing my black pants and my adventure racing work shirt, right?
Right.
I'm like, and I had a haircut. I'm like, okay. So I get to deliver on the stage, and you can see my face, and the picture's on Facebook. It's pretty darn cool.
Ed, yet another reason that you're my hero.
Oh, wait. Sorry. I know we're over time. One more thing.
Go right ahead.
I got the bike in the studios. I'm standing around waiting, killing time.
Right.
Jay Leno rolls in, and he's wearing blue jeans and that blue shirt. Like, he wears that everywhere, I guess.
Right.
Except when he's on the TV. And he walks right up to the bike, and he starts, you know, turning the key on and touching the bike and looking at it. So I walk up and I go, I'm sorry, sir, if you touch my bike, I have to kill you. And he gives me a look like, who the fuck are you, right? And all the staff guys are like, And then I introduced myself. Hey, Jay at Sorbo, I built the bike. What do you think? You know, so he took it for a ride in the parking lot.
That's
while the
so
lawyer
cool.
people were freaking out, worried that he was going to get hurt.
That's
funny as hell.
That's,
you know, when, like, he's a good guy.
When you're Jay Leno, you get to tell the legal staff to go stuff it for a while.
I don't know, man. One of the people there was telling me about it. They did a zip line thing, and he got hurt, and they were freaking out, right? Because how do you replace him in 5 minutes warning time?
You don't,
show, right?
You don't. but occasionally you can get away with it. Speaking of getting away, he's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.